Thanks for tuning in to the program tonight. We are here to entertain you, certainly not to enlighten you. Speaking about entertaining, I just got to play this for you. Joy Behar, she's from The View, I guess, right? She has her own show on Headline News, or HLN, as they call themselves now. Ron Reagan Jr. was on her program the other day and was discussing Dick Cheney's recent comments that President Obama is not as dedicated to fighting terror and protecting the country as was George Bush. Now, keep in mind, this is Ronald Reagan Jr., and it doesn't make any difference how many times these rat bastards on the right evoke Ron Jr.'s father's name. Ron Jr. probably knows his dad, or knew his dad, a hell of a lot better than these people. But the iconic Ronald Reagan's son, Ron Reagan Jr., who, because of being in the business together, I happen to know, full disclosure, I want you to listen to this. 67 seconds. Joy Behar is kind of dense, but listen to the conversation. It starts out about Obama not as dedicating to fighting terror as was the man who was president when the worst terrorist attack on American soil occurred.
Cheney's saying that Obama is not as good as George
Bush.
He's
not really committed to protecting the country. What an ugly thing to say about any president.
Is that a treasonous offense to say something like that?
Well, I don't know about that. It's an offense of stupidity. Dick Cheney is an unindicted war criminal, basically. Uh-huh. He presided over a policy of torture in this country, and torture is against our laws and against international covenants we have signed. We are actually obligated as a nation to prosecute people who have committed torture. You know who signed the covenant against torture originally back in the 1980s, a U.S. president?
Ronald Reagan.
Exactly. Called it an abhorrent, and he meant it.
He worries that President Obama does not have the same commitment to terrorism George Bush had. Now, yeah. Hillary Clinton.
Remind me when 9/11 happened? Whose watch was that?
It was on the George Bush watch.
Yeah, and they ignored the warnings just to refresh everybody's memory about that?
Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda determined to attack in America, and the details of that was they're planning to use airplanes. It was like, yeah, I'm on vacation now. Whatever. Yeah, we'll deal with that later.
Unbelievable. Ronald Reagan Jr. just thought I would toss that out. I like Ron Reagan Jr. You know what the right wing says about Ron Jr.? He was a ballet dancer. That's code. So last night, how about that? How about that dinner? Woo! You talk about some heavy hitters. Holy Toledo. And I'm not talking about the media stars and musicians and, you know, the politicians and people like that. I'm talking about, let's see, I don't have the entire guest list that sat down to sup with the president and first lady and the, quote, president, end quote, of China, Hu Jintao. I don't have the complete guest list, but I got a couple of them here. Jamie Dimon, head of J.P. Morgan Chase, one of the most predatory banking institutions in the history of capitalism. J.P. Morgan Chase, responsible for God only knows how many homeless families tonight and last night when they were sitting there stuffing their faces with haute cuisine. Lloyd Blankfein. Oh, wasn't he a special guest, huh? The head of Goldman Sachs. This is a guy who defines predation. What did Matt Taibbi say? Something about a vampire squid? Muhtar Kent, the head of Coca-Cola. Woo! Coca-Cola, a company that hired and paid for assassins in South America to murder union organizers who tried to organize the workers for Coca-Cola, based right here in Atlanta. Hired assassins, for Christ's sake. There they were. Who else? Steve Ballmer, the head of Microsoft. who's doing absolutely nothing as far as I know. I may be wrong here, but I don't think he's doing anything to keep the internet, is he? He doesn't give a goddamn. Why should he care? Robert Iger, the head of Disney. A company that exports the worst kind of brain damage poison to the rest of the world. Robert Iger, there he was, ladies and gentlemen. This is a weird one. Wendy Murdoch was there. Wendy Murdoch, the wife of Rupert, of the Rupert Murdoch Broadcast Terrorist Organization. There was a picture of her on AOL.com, or AOL's website, and she's standing there, you know, walking across the entranceway there by herself. No escort. Wonder where Rupert was. Some bitch was probably in the basement, right? Rupert Murdoch. They probably had to sneak him in the back way. But there she was, Wendy Murdoch. I guess she was invited because she is of Chinese descent, right? She's Chinese-American, I believe. Yeah. And they had at least one mass murderer there. The gnome, Henry Kissinger, with his gigantic wife. What a picture the two of them make. You talk about Mutt and Jeff. There he was, Henry Kissinger. Mass killer, come to sup with the Chi-Coms. Oh, I'm sorry, they're not communists anymore. The Chinese capitalists and Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein. Oh, and Jeff Immelt, he was there. The head of General Electric. A huge weapons and death-producing company who single-handedly has caused more pollution on this planet than probably any other company in the history of humankind. There he was, ladies and gentlemen. I looked, and you know, I couldn't find any labor leaders there. Couldn't find any. Couldn't find one. Not that there are that many left, but no labor leaders on the guest list. Social activists, I didn't see anybody. I think they had somebody there from Human Rights Watch, but he or she, I think it was a he, I think he had to sit way back over there behind the potted plant. Any Code Pink people there? I didn't see any. Hello, Code Pink? Nope, nobody here. How about some of the veterans who are members of anti-war veterans groups? You know, decorated veterans. People who were out there slaughtering and being slaughtered for the good of not just American capitalism, but Chinese capitalism too. Not a single one! Oh, there was the Marine Honor Guard, but I'm talking about anti-war veterans. Obama must have forgot them. Forgot to put them on the guest list, huh? So there they sat. Jamie Dimon, Lloyd Blankfein, Muhtar Kent, Wendy Murdoch, Steve Ballmer, Robert Iger, Henry Kissinger, Jeff Immelt, and on and on. I think there were about 250 people that were that made the cut. Astonishing. Not really. All right, when we come back, you've probably heard this. Did I play it the other night? Yeah, I think I did. Yeah, I'm going to play it again tonight. The insane clown Glenn Beck ordering people to be shot in the head. Probably more than you really want to, but it is pertinent to what I want to talk about here. Glenn Beck, who is not only a definable clinical psychopath, but as I've said before, he wants to see people dead in the streets.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you. They're dangerous because they believe. Karl Marx is their George Washington. You will never change their mind. They want to overthrow our entire system of government, and their words say it. Why won't you believe it? The revolution of 1776 was a picnic compared to what the revolutionaries of today would like to do. It's not a lot of fun. Usually millions of people die. But I'm glad to see our politicians will co-opt those people so they can have power.
Listen to this sick bastard. Shoot him in the head. Oh, okay. Anybody in particular? On the afternoon of January 6, Francis Fox Piven, a distinguished professor, legendary activist, writer, and longtime contributor to The Nation magazine, from which I'm taking this, received an email from an unknown correspondent. There was no text, just a subject line that read, "Die, you," and then the C word, which to women is as offensive as the N word is to African Americans. "Die, you blank." It was not the first piece of hate email Piven had gotten, nor would it be the last. One writer told her to go back to Canada, you dumb bitch. Another ended with this wish, may cancer find you soon. Piven was unnerved but not surprised. These are not pretty emails, but they appear positively decorous compared with what has been written about her by commentators on Glenn Beck's website, The Blaze, where she's been the target of a relentless campaign to demonize her and worse. There, under cover of anonymous handles, scores of people have called for Piven's murder, even volunteering to do the job with their own hands. Quote, somebody tell Francis I have 5,000 rounds ready and I'll give my life to take our freedom back, wrote Super Wrench numeral 4. JST1425 wrote, one shot, one kill. Patriot 1952 wrote, the only redistribution I'm interested in is that of a precious metal, lead. Posts like these are interwoven with ripples of misogyny, outbursts of bizarre anti-Semitism, and crude insults about Piven's looks. She's actually a noted beauty. And age. She's 78. The fusillade, this fusillade was evidently set off by Piven's recent Nation editorial calling for a mass movement of the unemployed, titled Mobilizing the Jobless. But Glenn Beck has had Piven in his crosshairs for some time. In the past few years, he's featured Piven along with her late husband, Richard Cloward, in at least 28 broadcasts, all of which paint them as masterminds of an overarching left-wing plot that he calls the Cloward-Piven Strategy, which supposedly engineered the financial crisis of 2008 and health care reform. Also engineered Obama's election, massive voter fraud, among other world historical events. Cloward and Piven, Beck once argued, are, quote, fundamentally responsible for the unsustainability and possible collapse of our economic system, end quote. In his most recent diatribe against Piven, 3 days ago, he repeatedly called her, quote, the enemy of the Constitution, end quote. In Beck's telling, because Piven and her comrades on the left support civil disobedience in some circumstances, it is they, not the heavily armed militias of the radical right, who threaten American safety.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head.
You're going to have to shoot them in the head. And some of you people out there want to talk to me about equivalency as to what you hear on this program and what this sick, murderous son of a bitch is advocating every single day on his program? Get real. A few weeks after Beck was talking about you're going to have to shoot them in the head, the guy stopped by police in a San Francisco shootout. He was on his way to murder members of the ACLU and the Tides Foundation. And in interviews, this would-be murderer later would say about Beck, that he was viewed as a school teacher on television. Beck has been saying stuff like this forever. It's just, usually it's not this direct.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
As the Nation says regarding his targeting now of the 78-year-old woman, Frances Fox Piven, the Nation says it's tempting not to dignify such ludicrous distortions as Beck has done with Piven with a response. But in brief, Piven, throughout her career as an activist and academic, has embodied the best of American democracy. It's been her life's work to amplify the voices of the disenfranchised through voter registration drives, grassroots organization, and when necessary, street protest. The way economic injustice warps and erodes our democracy has been a central preoccupation for her. But passive lament has never been her game. Recognizing the leverage that oppressed groups have and working with them to use it is her special genius. It's not surprising, then, that the pseudo-populist right finds her so threatening. The highly personalized and concerted campaign against Piven, already unsettling, takes on added gravity in the context of the recent shootings of Representative Gabrielle Giffords, Federal Judge John Roll, and 18 other people in Arizona. But while commentators debate whether the killer in that case was inspired by the ravings of right-wing demagogues, the forgotten story of Byron Williams provides a straightforward example of the way hateful rhetoric fuels violence. In July, Williams, a convicted bank robber, put on a suit of body armor and got in the car with a 9mm handgun, a shotgun, and a 30-caliber rifle equipped with armor-piercing bullets and set off for San Francisco. His destination was the Tides Foundation, which had been mentioned at that point in at least 29 episodes of the Glenn Beck Show, sometimes along with Piven. Williams' goal, as he later told police, quote, was to kill people of importance at the Tides Foundation and the ACLU in order to start a revolution, end quote. Williams' mother said that he'd been watching TV and was upset at the way Congress was railroading through all these left-wing agenda items. Or, as Williams himself put it, quote, I would have never started watching Fox News if it wasn't for the fact that Beck was on there. And it was the things that he did, it was the things he exposed that blew my mind, end quote. California Highway Patrol officers pulled Williams over for driving erratically and after a firefight subdued and arrested him before he could blow anyone else's mind away.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
You know, for a responsible journalist or a responsible media outlet, such an incident would have spurred a process of intense self-scrutiny. But as the nation points out, this is Glenn Beck and Fox. And as is evident from the campaign now against Francis Fox Piven, nothing of the sort occurred. In the hundreds of posts about Piven on The Blaze, there is not one admonition to tone down the violent rhetoric. Not one clear instance in which an editor intervenes to moderate the thread. In fact, commenters seem at liberty to egg one another on. One poster pointedly noted that Piven lives in New York City and teaches at City University in New York. Another then linked to a website that listed Piven's home address and phone number. One of the posters, Captain Jack, wrote, "Why is this woman still alive?" Responded Diamondback, "Mainly because you haven't killed her, I imagine. See, someone that really cares and has the courage of their convictions must actually do something." And the calls for assassination are not limited to Piven.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head.
Another poster there, Civil Unrest Now, put it in a post that perfectly captures the tenor of right-wing eliminationist fantasy. Quote,
I say bring it. 90 million legal gun owners and over 220 million legal firearms. Most in the hands of the people who claim to be center-right. I think it's time to reduce the surplus population of leeches, layabouts, left-wing nuts, mainstream media, liberal politicians and most defense attorneys.
Of course, crazed right-wingers enjoy the protection of the First Amendment, as does everybody, but the overwhelming and transparent calls for murder on Beck's website, among other right-wing hotspots, can't be casually dismissed as just talk. At one time, it was all just talk for Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh and Dr. George Tiller's assassin, Scott Reuter, too. We were lucky the police happened to pull over Byron Williams before he reached the Tide Foundation's door. In a sense, Glenn Beck was lucky, too. How long will this luck hold out?
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head.
And you got to wonder, wasn't there a time in this country where if somebody got on the radio and said something like that, that the least that would happen would be that they would be thrown off the airwaves forever? And the worst that would happen would be some real small d Democrats, people who really believed in the sanctity of our Constitution and the hope that the framers had put out, please evolve, United States of America, that people, in other words, real patriots, would have found the radio station where this piece of human waste was broadcast and drag him out in the street and beat him senseless. There was a time in this country when that would have happened. And that's A. B, there was a time in this country where decent men would not allow themselves to be used as bodyguards for this neo-Nazi. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. And some of you pissant right-wingers got your bloomers in a wad because I said that this hate-monger Rush Limbaugh ought to choke to death on his own throat fat. Are you kidding me? You're going to have to shoot him in the head, he says. And now he's targeted a 78-year-old woman. And these scum flying monkeys that crap all over that website, the blaze, they leave their droppings. The things they're saying about this old woman, you gutless bastards, every single one of you. So you're going to kill a 78-year-old woman? Is that what you're saying on Glenn Beck's website as he eggs you on and just whips you like the dumbheads that you really are, just beat you to death? More! More! Keep it coming, boys! I'm Glenn Beck. I want to see people, you know.
Radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you. They're dangerous because they believe. Karl Marx is their George Washington. You will never change their mind. They want to overthrow our entire system of government, and their words say it. Why won't you believe it? The revolution of 1776 was a picnic compared to what the revolutionaries of today would like to do. It's not a lot of fun. Usually millions of people die. But I'm glad to see our politicians will co-opt those people so they can have power. Fundamental transformation. It's what America is going through right now. And the progressives, the Marxist revolutionary progressives, are still not happy.
Where eternally nice. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Equivalence? John Stewart, you're out of your mind. Keith Olbermann, you better check and make sure your writers are writing stuff that you want to say on your program when you try to relate the rage and anger, the reactive rage and anger on the left about what the neo-fascists are doing to this country. If you want to relate that to some psychotic son of a bitch who goes on the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network and blasts for everybody, telling everybody you're going to have to shoot him in the head. Jesus God. And then there's this. An Indiana woman who ran unsuccessfully for U.S. Congress last year was being held on charges she made threats against judges and other officials on her Facebook account. Morgan County, Indianapolis prosecutor Steve Sonega, who said he was among those targeted, said he decided to move quickly after discovering the threats, in part due to the shootings in Arizona that wounded U.S. Representative Gabriel Giffords and killed six others. Prosecutor Sonega said, quote, "I think the Arizona situation drove me to the sense of urgency," end quote. Her name is Cheryl Allen of Martinsville, Indianapolis. She was being held on a $100,000 bond Saturday in a jail in her hometown about 28 miles south of Indianapolis. State police arrested her on 8 felony counts of intimidation last Thursday, the same day authorities discovered the postings, which were apparently published on her page 3 days earlier. Cheryl Allen repeatedly maintained her innocence during a court hearing Friday, but after the charges were read, she said, "Someday may someone get even with them," according to the Reporter Times newspaper. She could face 4 to 24 years in prison if convicted, state police said. The alleged threats mentioned 4 Morgan County judges and other public officials, including the prosecutor. Media reports said that Allen had previously filed a lawsuit that was dismissed by a judge. One of the posts cited on her site said, "One day I will have my revenge on your seeking so much revenge on me." Another one said, "Someday, boom, while you're setting in your office, and you know I won't even be the one pulling the trigger," said another. Prosecutor said, "In light of what happened in Arizona, we thought we had better move quickly." She was traveling, or not her. Who is this? The Reporter Times newspaper said, the judge had set her bond in court that authorities intend to have her mental health evaluated. She ran for the Republican nomination for Indiana's 4th Congressional District seat in 2010, the seat that was vacated by U.S. Representative Steve Beyer and eventually won by new U.S. Representative Todd Rokita. In a Facebook post on January 8th, she wrote, quote, "What do you need to have done to get all the current government out of office? That is why we should own guns. To go into court to get my right to trial back." Obviously a Glenn Beck listener. Another Beck listener. Limbaugh listener. Savage listener. Hannity listener. Who takes to heart what Glenn Beck says. It's incredible.
"The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head."
And you know what? He'll be on the air tomorrow. And you know what? He'll be on the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Network tomorrow also. And you know what? They will rebroadcast some of his insane ravings on Saturday, somewhere in the United States of America, and on Sunday. And you know what? On Monday, this wannabe murderer will be back on the air, on radio and television, and then on Tuesday, the same thing. And you know what else? The only reason he is on any media outlet is because capitalist corporate America wants him there. All those people I mentioned that were at the Obama Hu Jintao supper, Jamie Dimon, head of J.P. Morgan Chase, he wants Beck on the radio. Lloyd Blankfein, head of Goldman Sachs, he wants Beck on television. Muhtar Kent, head of Coca-Cola, he wants him there. Henry Kissinger, mass murderer, he wants him there. Jeff Immelt, head of General Electric, he wants him there. And, of course, Wendy Murdoch, so does she. So with all that support from corporate America, do you know when Glenn Beck will be taken off the air? Never. It doesn't make any difference what he says. We'll be back after the break. Psychopath's name, I feel dirty. I feel filthy. It's just pretty hard to deal with. He's out there advocating shooting people in the head. Prairie 2 has, and guess what? After I share some Prairie 2 with you, got an email from Bob Alexander. He freed himself from the right-wing terrorists, apparently, who were holding him captive. Oh, he had the flu. Okay, never mind. And he's written a moment with Bob here. We're going to share it with you tonight. Anyway, Prairie 2, how many chicken feet for that flat-screen television? What's he getting at here? Well, let's see. Perry Tu writes, after meeting with the world's most powerful man today, that would be Chairman Hu Jintao, President Obama talked up our trade with China, saying how the $100 billion in goods we sell China each year creates 500,000 American jobs. Of course, he didn't mention that 4.5 million American jobs have gone to China in just the last 10 years. His estimate of the jobs created is doubtless exaggerated, since our biggest export is recycled cardboard. And just how many jobs does that create? Fully half of the containers that go back to China with anything in them at all are filled with cardboard or other recycling. The majority of the boxes are empty. I wonder if the empty containers are counted as an export. Probably. We also export a lot of old-growth forest logs, various ores, and fresh water from Lake Superior. None of this creates very many jobs. We export roasted soybean meal and other value-added farm products that are counted as manufactured goods. How do you add value to a farm product? Removing the feet from a chicken and throwing them into a barrel counts. We also do that with the leftovers from pork processing. This does create some jobs, but mostly for undocumented workers at minimum wage. We do sell aircraft from Boeing and Lockheed to the Chinese. The deals always include all the technology that goes into building them. Can you say China's J-20 fifth generation stealth fighter? How about those long-range hypersonic ship-killing missiles? Anything to make a buck for U.S. corporations, but not that many jobs. There might be some job opportunities in the military if China decides to flex its muscle. Not that we would have an economy to pay for them. On the bright side, though, Chairman Hu said today that China will go ahead with a $25 billion order from Boeing. There had been some doubt that would happen with China close to rolling out its own wide-body passenger jet. I had a conservative challenge me on this prediction by saying, would you fly on a Chinese jet? Guess what, genius? That's where Boeing gets their critical parts. So you are flying on one already. If you use an airline that has outsourced its aircraft overhauls to Central America, you may be flying with black market parts that didn't even pass Chinese inspection. Initial jobless claims in the U.S. were down sharply last week. Production of chicken feet and pork intestines must be up. PrairieNumeral2.com. What else we got? 16 hours after their initial, this is from The Nation also, Nancy Goldstein, 16 hours after their initial report, ABC is now running a story that calls the race connection regarding the bomb found along Spokane's Martin Luther King Day parade route inescapable. Race. That's per the estimate of the local FBI agent investigating the case and acknowledging that it's an incidence of domestic terrorism. Egged on, of course, Mike Malloy adds, by the right-wing talkers in this country who push and push. Nancy writes, as my piece notes, that certainly wasn't their initial reaction, as evidenced by yesterday's piece, which included none of these details despite their widespread availability. ABC, the same major media outlet that leaped on the Sarah Palin is receiving death threat story, based solely on the say-so of a Palin aide, has now chosen an odd moment to show professional restraint. The station's initial, or the network's initial reportage of Monday's Martin Luther King Jr. Day bomb threat in Spokane mentions not a single detail that could imply a connection between the bomb and the purpose of the parade. That's pretty remarkable given that the primary source for ABC's story, FBI agent, Special Agent Frank Harrell, did link the two. Spokane's local paper ran a story hours before ABC's that quotes him, the FBI agent, saying, quote, clearly the timing and placement of the device secreted in a backpack with the Martin Luther King parade is not coincidental, end quote. Agent Harrell describes the link between the bomb and the MLK Day celebration in March as, quote, inescapable, adding that, quote, at that point, the incident falls directly in the realm and sphere of domestic terrorism. Clearly, there was a political or social agenda here, end quote. So how could ABC's own interview with Agent Harrell settle merely for his description of the bomb as, quote, a viable device with, quote, potential for lethality? Well, heck, maybe they were just being cautious about jumping to conclusions. After all, what's a backpack filled with shrapnel aimed at an MLK Day parade and confirmed by an FBI agent as an instance of domestic terrorism compared to a Palin aides hearsay? Oh, my! Bad enough that the Tucson rampage spawned a Republican and right-wing campaign to brand it as an isolated incident. If ABC's currently uninvestigative take on the Spokane incident is any indication, that campaign is working well. So, for journalism that connects the dots between Spokane, Tucson, the rise of an extremist American right, and yes, the uptick in violent rhetoric that feeds it, go to David Neiwert. He's an award-winning writer and former MSNBC producer who's been writing about the growing trend in homegrown terrorism for years. Long before Palin was even popular enough to go around putting up gun site decorated electoral maps, Neiwert, is that how you pronounce it? An Idaho native and longtime Pacific Northwest resident was monitoring the existence and roots of violent right-wing activity. Anyone who still needs convincing that we are in the midst of what Neiwert calls, quote, a gradually mounting litany of violence directed against liberal and government targets, end quote, should read Neiwert's devastating list of 20 such so-called isolated incidents over the past 2.5 years. It begins in July 2008. That's when a gunman named Jim David Atkinson, agitated at how liberals are destroying America, walks into a Unitarian church and opens fire, killing 2 churchgoers and wounding 4 others. It ends, for now, with the MLK Day bomb threat in Spokane. But really, who still needs convincing? Oh, right, ABC. So, what's the proper reaction to all this? Nothing? Just nothing? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Email here from Hernan in Argentina regarding Beck. He writes, Mike, it strikes me as purely insane that in the violent times your country is living, A violent subject like Glenn Beck is allowed to spew his garbage rhetoric on the airwaves, knowing that his discourse can encourage a weak mind to do horrible things. I assure you that this same guy in Argentina would be kicked off the air simultaneously by left and right and sent directly to jail. Here, in my country at least, this kind of conduct is a crime called crime apology. In a few words, you indirectly influence society to engage in violence. This is all you need in this country to go to jail when your intentions are hurting others without getting dirty yourself. People have to be protected, and they are not being. Giffords, the Tides Foundation, the ACLU, tomorrow could be you or a friend or a relative. And meanwhile, the FCC, what are they doing? And one more thing, this doesn't only apply to Beck. His boss is the real criminal here. Regards, Hernan. Scary times. Hey, did you hear about this? from Credo, C-R-E-D-O, CredoAction.com. You know, John Boehner and the Republicans have repealed, the vote is meaningless, but they have taken the health care issue and repealed the vote. Why not suggest to Boehner and the rest of these thugs that they practice what they preach, right? From Credo Action, who would have the audacity to vote for repealing affordable health care for 32 million Americans while gladly accepting generous federally subsidized insurance for themselves? Speaker of the House John Boehner, who led the effort along with 236 other congressional health care hypocrites. That's who. For the past few years, especially during the election season, Republicans and a select few Democrats did everything they could to derail health care reform. They fueled fears and misinformation, throwing around terms like socialist, fascist, government takeover, death panels. Now they fulfilled their campaign promise and voted for a full repeal. But what most, like Boehner, haven't done is given up the affordable subsidized care that they voted yesterday to deny to the rest of America. Oh, my God. So they have a campaign going here at the website. It is, you go to their website and you can sign on to this message to Boehner. It says, call out the healthcare hypocrisy by sending Speaker Boehner the actual form he can submit to cancel his federal health insurance. Tell him to practice what he preaches. So go to the website, credoaction.com, C-R-E-D-O, C-R-E-D-O, action.com. Now, I'm sure a lot of you teabaggers will just stampede and run all over each other to get to this website to, I mean, isn't this what you all have been talking about? The communist, socialist, fascist, Nazi, Attila the Hun, Barack Obama, Kenyan, communist, socialist, Nazi with his health care reform. Right? Isn't that what you weasels, you cockroaches have been screaming about for what, a year and a half? Isn't this why you sent all those good Republicans to Washington, right? But what are you going to do now, Tea Partiers? Are you going to demonstrate, they're demonstrating their hypocrisy, are you going to demonstrate yours? Well, of course you are. Of course you are. Because this has nothing to do with health care. It has nothing to do with anything except for the fact that you're a bunch of racist sons of bitches and can't stand the idea that an African-American man sits in the White House. Right? Oh, that's not the case? You're not racist at all? Not a bit? Okay. Well, then go to Credo Action, C-R-E-D-O, CredoAction.com, and get your name on the petition to send John Boehner and the rest of these hypocrites a form they can fill out where they cancel the federal subsidized health insurance that you, Mr. Teabagger, are paying for. Go ahead. Go ahead. Credo, C-R-E-D-O, action.com. Go ahead, teabagger. do it. We'll be back after the break. Stick around if you can. Bob Alexander, A Moment with Bob, coming up here right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Hey, what's that I hear in the distance? Listen. Listen. Where is it? I think I hear it. No? Where'd it go? It sounded like... Wait, what's that? Oh my God! Oh no! It's time for another Moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode is entitled Feeding Time. Hey, Mike, I haven't paid too much attention to current events for the past week and a half. The flu carried me off to Never Never Land, and now that I've returned, I just can't seem to follow what's going on without feeling woozy. My immune system hasn't completely bounced back yet, so I can only take in the actions or words of psychopaths in very small doses. Since I can't follow the news, I can only think about what it's like to live in the good old U.S. of A. The most important part of the day, if you live in a prison, a nut house, or zoo, is feeding time. Even if the food is mediocre to bad, any break in the constant boredom is welcome. One of the first things learned when living in an institution is you must follow the rules. If you don't, they won't feed you. The rules might be degrading, inhumane, counterproductive, or just plain stupid, but it doesn't make any difference. If you don't follow the rules, you won't get fed. After understanding that particular fact of life, most of us accept the operant conditioning so we can line up with everyone else holding their food tray at dinner time. So life goes on. We follow the rules and they feed us. But what if we want a double portion of stew or a bigger piece of pie? How do we get it? We can't follow the rules any better than we already are. What do we have to do to get a bigger piece of cherry pie? At first, we only have ourselves to use as a resource. If we want more out of existence, we have to start thinking about how we can use other people as our resource. Look around. Pay attention. Watch your fellow prisoners or inmates. You'll find somebody who's not following the rules, and then you can tell a guard or the head nurse all about it. Then you can have your pie. Essentially, all you have to do is align yourself with the authorities instead of your fellow prisoners or inmates. You stop being a part of us when you start cooperating with them. And it pays off. The prison population is huge. There's always somebody who's not following the program you can rat on. There's always somebody you can use to get ahead. And you prosper because you've understood how to use the rules. You're on a whole new level now. But you're not alone. Other prisoners or inmates also have tumbled to the process of how to get more. These are people like you who have figured out how to use the system. They know you can't get anywhere just following the rules. These are people who can work, you can work with. Like I said, the population is huge. You need a network of eyes and ears to keep track of what's going on. You need these people if you want to expand. It makes all the sense in the world to join forces with them. So you do. And you prosper. Sometimes at night, after lights out, uncomfortable thoughts surface. What would happen if the other prisoners or inmates found out what you're doing? What would they do if they found out you and your new friends were using them? You got to continue to be very careful that they don't. This is the big secret that no one can find out. You and your new friends must create a security arm of the network that is more important than the other work the network does. If it doesn't stay a secret, you'll lose the network. Everything that you've worked for will be gone. You'll be surrounded by the people you've used, and they won't be very happy finding out they've been played for chumps for your game. Now you tell yourself, this isn't paranoia. It's just good business practice to safeguard the business. And life goes on. The network continues to ferret out those who don't follow the rules. And the security arm of the network watches the population, looking for anyone who looks like they're getting too close to your secret. You turn in the rule breakers and get rid of the threats. It's easy to get rid of threats to the network. Most people would do anything to get more stew or a bigger piece of pie. And you prosper. There is so much work to be done every day maintaining the system. It takes up so much time, but it's worth it because when the system is running smoothly, it is beautiful to behold. The more work you put in, the more you get back in return. Reinforcement, punishment, extinction. It works like a charm. The system we've completely bought into is from an old design that has in its heart another secret. That secret is guarded more ferociously than the secret we have kept from our fellow prisoners or inmates. We've never looked for it because we spent all of our time maintaining the system that supported us. Who has the time for thinking when the system demands all? But if we had the time to think, if we knew that it didn't make any difference how many of our fellow prisoners or inmates we ratted out and pushed out of our way, if we never chose to work within the system at all, but just looked at the system, how long do you think it would take for us to figure out that the warden eats better than anyone? Regards, Bob. With Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling and the makers of all sorts of SSRIs. You can find all of these at superbeans.com. I think that's still operative. Superbeans.com. Bob Alexander. Thanks, Bob. Hope you're feeling better. Couldn't tell from your essay. Did you know that Congress passed socialized medicine and mandated health insurance in 1798? Hey, you dumbass teabaggers, listen up. The ink was barely dry on the Health Care Reform Act when the first of many lawsuits to block what the Obama administration got through was filed in a Florida district court. The pleadings in this court case read in part,
"The Constitution nowhere authorizes the United States to mandate, either directly or under threat of penalty, that all citizens and legal residents have qualifying health care coverage."
It turns out that the Founding Fathers would beg to disagree. In July of 1798, Congress passed and President John Adams signed what was called, quote, "an act for the relief of sick and disabled seamen." The law authorized the creation of a government-operated marine hospital service and mandated that privately employed sailors be required to purchase health care insurance. What? Now, keep in mind that the Fifth Congress, that's who was in power then, the Fifth, not the 114th, the Fifth Congress did not really need to struggle over the intentions of the drafters of the Constitution in creating this act because many of the members of the Fifth Congress were the drafters of the Constitution. Same people! And when the bill came to the desk of President John Adams for signature, I think it's safe to assume that the man in that chair had a pretty good grasp of what the framers had in mind. By the way, Rick Ungar wrote this at Forbes.com. Here's how it happened. During the early years of our union, the nation's leaders realized that foreign trade would be essential to the young country's ability to create a viable economy. To make it work, they relied on the nation's private merchant ships and the sailors that made them up to be the instruments of this trade. The problem was that a merchant mariner's job was a difficult and dangerous undertaking in those days. Sailors were constantly hurting themselves, picking up weird tropical diseases, and so forth. The troublesome reductions in manpower caused by back strains, twisted ankles, and strange diseases often left the ship's captain without enough sailors to get underway, a problem both bad for business and a strain on the nation's economy. But those were the days when members of Congress still used their collective heads to solve problems, not create them. Some more of this when we come back. Yeah, Congress passed socialized medicine and mandated health insurance in 1798, you stupid, ignorant, Palin-loving teabag freaks.
Gonna feel you belong. Nocturnal vacation, unnecessary sedation. Inside you're gonna feel right at home.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So, back in 1789, the Fifth Congress, we are now dealing with the horror of the 114th, but the Fifth Congress mandated through an act for the relief of sick and disabled seamen the creation of a government-operated hospital service and mandated that privately employed sailors be required to purchase health care insurance. It was in the interest of the new struggling little country to do that. Rick Ungar, writing at Forbes, goes on, "Realizing that a healthy maritime workforce was essential to the ability of our private merchant ships to engage in foreign trade, Congress and the President resolved to do something about it. Entered the an act for the relief of sick and disabled seamen." Rick says, "I encourage you to read the law, as in those days, legislation was short to the point, fairly easy to understand. The law did a number of fascinating things. First, it created the Marine Hospital Service, a series of hospitals built and operated by the federal government to treat injured and ailing privately employed sailors. The government provided health care service, was to be paid for by a mandatory tax on the maritime sailors, little more than 1% of a sailor's wages, the same to be withheld from a sailor's pay and turned over to the government by the ship's owner. The payment of this tax for health care was not optional. If a sailor wanted to work, he had to pay up." This is pretty much how it works today in European nations that conduct socialized medical programs for its citizens. The law was not only the first time the United States created a socialized medical program, but was also the first to mandate that privately employed citizens be legally required to make payments to pay for health care services. And upon passage of the law, ships were no longer permitted to sail in and out of our ports if the health care tax had not been collected by the ship's owners and paid over to the government. And thus the creation of the first payroll tax in our nation's history, 1789. When a sick or injured sailor needed medical assistance, then the government would confirm that his payments had been collected and turned over by his employer, and would then give the sailor a voucher entitling him to admission to the hospital where he would be treated for whatever ailed him. While a few of the healthcare facilities accepted the government voucher were privately operated, the majority of the treatment was given out at the federal maritime hospitals that were built and operated by the government in the nation's largest ports. The program eventually became the Public Health Service, a government-operated health service that exists to this day under the supervision of the Surgeon General. So much for the claim that the Constitution nowhere authorizes the United States to mandate, either directly or under threat of penalty, blah, 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 blah. As for Congress's understanding of the limits of the Constitution at the time the Act was passed, it's worth noting that Thomas Jefferson was the president of the Senate during the Fifth Congress, while Jonathan Dayton, the youngest man to sign the United States Constitution, was the Speaker of the House. Well, I'm sure a number of readers are scratching their heads in an effort to find the distinction between the circumstances of 1798 and today. I think you'll find it difficult. Yes, the law at that time required only merchant sailors to purchase health care coverage. Thus, one could argue that nobody was forcing anyone to become a merchant sailor, and therefore they were not required to purchase health care coverage unless they chose to pursue a career at sea. However, this is no different from what we are looking at today. Each of us has the option to turn down employment that would require us to purchase private health insurance under the health care reform law, right? Would that be practical? Of course not. Just as it would have been impractical for a man seeking employment as a merchant sailor in 1798 to turn down a job on a ship because he would be required by law to purchase health care coverage. What's more, a constitutional challenge to the legality of mandated health care cannot exist based on the number of people who were required to purchase the coverage. It must necessarily be based on whether any American can be so required. Clearly, the nation's founders, serving in the Fifth Congress, and there were many of them, believed that mandated health insurance coverage was permitted within the limits established by our Constitution. Stick that in your ass and smoke it, John Boehner, huh? The moral of the story is that the political right wing has to stop pretending they have the blessings of the founding fathers as their excuse to oppose whatever this president has to offer. History makes it abundantly clear that they do not. Oh, no! Really? You can find this at Forbes.com. Rick Ungar, U-N-G-A-R, Rick Ungar. Congress passes socialized medicine and mandates health insurance in 1798. Now, you dweeby, ignorant, savage little teabaggers, why don't you go back to whatever you were doing before you decided that you're going to start killing people and listening to advocates on radio who insist you shoot people in the head? Go on back to whatever the hell you were doing, because all of you are so full of crap, you stink every time you walk. Are you aware of that? You don't know what the hell you're talking about. You never have. You never will. You're a bunch of little trolls that when Glenn Beck says, look to the left, you look. Look to the right, you look. Look down, you look. Look up, you look. You freaks. Bootstraps my ass. Ah. 1789. Next hour. I've got some socialism for you, okay? You little bagger freaks, can your mommies let you stay up late tonight and listen? Got some socialism for you. I'm going to recap that guest list at the Obama Hu Jintao dinner last night, too. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. As I mentioned earlier, and it bears repeating, the guest list, in case you missed it during the first hour, the guest list at last night's state dinner for Hu Jintao, the president of China. Actually, he's part of a seven or eight person ruling committee, kind of like the old Russian Politburo. And Hu Jintao is the figurehead, the spokesperson. There will be a new one when he leaves office. To refer to him as a president is extremely misleading. He was not elected to his position. Well, neither was George Bush. Oh, never mind. Anyway, it bears repeating the guest list last night. At the dinner, I don't mean the Hollywood stars and the musicians and the comedians and the baseball players and the jugglers and the clown acts. I'm just talking about, well, Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, one of the companies that is destroying the United States. Lloyd Blankfein, the head of Goldman Sachs. One of the companies that is destroying the United States. Muhtar Kent, the head of Coca-Cola. Steve Ballmer, the head of Microsoft. There was a picture on AOL.com, or at the AOL website, of Wendy Murdoch walking across the entranceway and being photographed. She is the wife, of course, of Rupert Murdoch, and she was unescorted, which means she went, but he didn't. Interesting. Wendy Murdoch is, I believe, of Chinese descent or Chinese ancestry, which might explain her invitation, but no Rupert. Robert Iger, the head of Disney. Steve Ballmer, the head of Microsoft. Henry Kissinger, mass global murderer. Jeff Immelt, the head of GE. I didn't see the entire guest list or invitation list. Those are just some of the photos that are circulating around the web of the privileged Americans who attended this dinner for America's next ruler. It may take another decade or two or three, but it is coming as surely as there's tea in China, right? Now, you may not be alive to see it. I know I probably won't. But eventually, the Chinese will dominate the entire planet, for better or for worse. And given the fact that Chinese capitalists and American capitalists seem to work fairly well together, it'll probably be for the worse. But in looking at the celebrities, and by celebrities I mean the mega wealthy, can you imagine the head of Goldman Sachs, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, two men, Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein, whose sole function is to eliminate jobs in this country, to push people into poverty, to steal their houses, to end their livelihoods, to destroy their chance to get any kind of health care. These rapacious, vampiric bastards sit down with the President of the United States and the cough, cough, President of China to eat what? You know who is missing? I didn't see any labor leaders. Did you? Any leaders of American labor movement as wounded as it is? Do you see anybody there? No? How about social activists? How about people who are working to maintain what's left of the social safety net in this country? Did you see any of them? No? What about anybody from Vote Vets or any of the anti-war veterans organizations? Any one of those people there? Anybody? No? How about somebody from Code Pink? No? It was quite a dinner, wasn't it? Quite a dinner. And the people who were invited were people who are hell-bent on destroying the United States as a world economic power, including the guest of honor. That's what made it so pungent, the stink that came from that dinner last night. Oh, everybody looked great. Oh, my God. I mean, everybody was well-dressed. Everybody looked super happy. There were smiles. There were toasts. There were grins. There was backslap. Well, not backslapping. You don't backslap Hu Jintao. There was smugness. There was self-satisfaction. There was self-referential congratulations. Here they were, the captains of America's gangster capitalism, directly responsible for providing all those wonderful jobs to the Chinese. There they were. Raise a glass. Let's have a toast. Hip, hip. Who damn Ray. I don't know, it just kind of turned my stomach. Wendy Murdoch, huh? Wendy Murdoch. Yeah, Wendy Murdoch, but no Rupert. Unless Rupert snuck in, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he snuck in the back door or came down the chimney or came inside a huge FedEx box, you know, anything to hide the fact that he was attending a state dinner. He has great business dealings with the Chinese, always has. He is as much of a fascist as they are, President of China. Jesus, God, please. But there was Wendy Murdoch, looking very nice, very stylish. She's only about 40, 50 years younger than her husband. I have no problem with that, you know. What is. But couldn't they have sent Sean Hannity to escort her or O'Reilly? Well, okay, not O'Reilly. That could have gotten awkward, you know. Hey, Wendy, you want to see a falafel? But I just have a sneaky feeling that Rupert was in that dinner somewhere. And the instructions were very explicit. Don't take any pictures of Rupert. You can photograph his wife, but not Rupert. Kind of odd. When we come back, a socialist analysis of the tragedy that occurred in Arizona. How long ago was it? It hasn't even been 2 weeks, has it? How long ago was the tragedy in Tucson? This Saturday will be 2 weeks. My God, time just condenses, doesn't it? Stay with us. Have you still got that handy? I know you still have it. That bit of sound from America's number one talk show host and leader of the Tea Party movement and huge influence on people who might pick up a gun and go shoot someone in this country, Glenn Beck.
Radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
You're going to have to shoot them in the head. Commenting on, Alan Jones wrote this at the Socialist Alternative in Seattle. Commenting on Jared Loeffner's assassination attempt against Gabriel Giffords when he seriously injured or killed six others and injured another 13 people. Andrew Sullivan, conservative blogger, wrote, quote, there is no way to understand the politics of this without Palin. She has long been the leader of the movement that drapes itself in military garb, that marinates in violent rhetoric, that worships gun culture, that has particular ferocity in the state of Arizona, and that never apologizes for anything. End quote. Andrew Sullivan, conservative. In the meantime, you have Glenn Beck suggesting that it's time to shoot people in the head. Since Obama took the oath of office, there have been, excluding the attack against Giffords, at least seven separate cases of political murder, dozens of attacks by unhinged right-wing elements. And the reason why there have been so many killing sprees can be attributed to a couple of things. The deep economic crisis in this country and the rise of the extremist right-wing rhetoric so personified by Palin, Beck, Limbaugh, Hannity, Savage, the rest of these America haters. It's important to note that during the recent midterm election, sessions of the Tea Party movement and at least one Republican senatorial candidate were calling publicly for Second Amendment remedy to the political issues if they weren't addressed to the liking of the right-wing neo-fascist candidate. In other words, guns, shoot, kill, murder. And as Alan Jones points out, it should also be noted that the killing spree took place in Arizona, site of the extreme right-wing Deport Them All immigration bill SB 1070, the law that would target not only immigrants but also those who looked suspicious. And if you look suspicious, produce your papers. And if you have no papers, please put your hands behind your back. All of that, of course, contributed to the atmosphere of racism and tension in the poor, benighted state of Arizona. What a sad place to live. Alan Jones says, in a period of unprecedented economic crisis and mass unemployment, right-wing demagogues like Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, Michael Savage, among many others, have used Rupert Murdoch's Fox News and the vast right-wing network of corporate-funded radio programs and blogs to target immigrants, to target homosexuals, to target socialists, to target public sector workers, to target unions, to target progressive activists. Back in 92, the election of Bill Clinton was also followed by a vicious upsurge of political tension, a polarization from the right that culminated in the Oklahoma City federal building bombing in 1995 with hundreds of deaths of innocent workers, including children. Oh, I misspoke. I'm sorry. Scores of deaths. It was only 168. That also belonged to Limbaugh and the rest of these right-wing pigs. New York Times and Rupert Murdoch's terrorist broadcast network reported that 22-year-old Loeffner may have links to a white supremacist website. Other evidence also points to connections between Loeffner and extreme right-wing influence, including references to treasonous laws by the government, currencies not backed by gold, the second U.S. Constitution, government mind control, and on and on and on. All stuff you can hear if you can stomach listening, if you can stomach listening to Beck or Hannity or Limbaugh, or the rest of these freaks. More when we come back from the break. Before the hour. So it hasn't even been 2 weeks since the attack engineered by the media right wing in this country against a sitting U.S. member of Congress. Play that Glenn Beck thing again there, Kathy.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the polls. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
Have to shoot them in the head. And Alan Jones, writing a socialist analysis of what happened, continuing, it is true that many of Loeffner's ideas are delusional, deranged, and more laced with conspiracy theories than overtly political, but that's not the whole story. Crucial to understanding these events is the political climate. Giffords, a Jewish conservative Democratic congresswoman, had just won a close election against a right-wing Tea Party extremist candidate. According to the New York Times, there had been threats of violence, including the smashing of the plate glass window of her Tucson office last March, because Giffords supported Obama's health care insurance bill and opposed Arizona's racist anti-immigrant profiling law. Due to the threats of violence, Giffords herself had said that she was armed and would defend herself if attacked. At his first press conference after the shooting, the sheriff of Pima County, Clarence Dupnik, spoke openly of, quote, the vitriol and rhetoric that we hear day in and day out from the people in the radio business and some people in the TV business, end quote, which he said was related to the attack. Referring to racist measures against immigrants, he said that the state of Arizona has, quote, become the mecca for prejudice and bigotry, end quote. The sheriff was referring to the anti-immigrant hysteria and the activities of armed vigilantes along the border with Mexico in Arizona. In response to Dupnik's comments about the circumstances that led to the massacre in Tucson, Arizona's right-wing media brazenly denounced him and called for his resignation. Commenting on the massacre, Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal wrote in an editorial that Loeffner was, quote, mentally disturbed, confused, and he targeted Giffords simply because she was, quote, prominent. Incredibly, another part of Murdoch's media empire, the right-wing Fox News, which has been at the forefront of inciting demagogic, hateful, and inflammatory rhetoric, denied any responsibility for the massacre. Fox News even demanded that Obama denounce those who want to blame anyone other than Loeffner for the violence, as if Loeffner had acted in a vacuum. In their editorial, the New York Times wrote that Loeffner, quote, is very much a part of a widespread squall of fear, anger, and intolerance that has produced violent threats against scores of politicians and infected the political mainstream with violent imagery, end quote, New York Times, which sounds a little bit like this.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
The so-called squall of fear has given rise to a populist right-wing phenomenon within the Republican Party, as was shown in the gains they made in the last midterm elections on the basis of demagogic attacks. The right-wing propaganda by Fox News, the Tea Party, candidates like Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin against immigrants and unions became necessary as the ruling class looked to deflect blame for the crisis that they caused, create scapegoats, and try to forestall united struggles of the working class. Well, of course. Gangster capitalism. They hire vampires like Glenn Beck, Hannity, Limbaugh, and the rest of these monsters to divert your attention. Oh, the communists have moved into Washington. Oh, the socialists are taking over. You're going to have to shoot them, Beck says. You're going to have to shoot them in the head, Beck says. Alan Jones continues, while Obama and the Democrats call for unity and make appeals against violence, they are sending drones to kill civilians in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We are called on to salute the so-called bravery of all politicians while they slash education and child care for our children and oversee a system that offers little hope for a decent future for people or the environment. Corporate domination and their political puppets are all to blame for a sick culture that creates isolation, alienation, violence, and fear. The media fills the airwaves with stories about why you should be afraid of your neighbors, while Glenn Beck says repeatedly that the Republic is hanging by a thread.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
According to the FBI, there was a 300% increase in threats against members of Congress in 2010 and over 1,000 death threats a month against Obama. Remember back in 2009, the Department of Homeland Security warned that, quote, right-wing extremism, end quote, was increasing because of the economic downturn, the election of the first African-American president, and pointed to the recruitment of returning vets into right-wing extremist organizations. Bigoted, hysterical, anti-Muslim attacks are now in the mainstream media and part of the Republican establishment. Just before September 11th last year, there were several instances of arson, bombings, vandalism against mosques in Tennessee, Texas, and Florida, as well as the stabbing of a Muslim cab driver in New York City. All of it encouraged by the right-wing demagogues that infest media in this country. The attack and serious injury of Gabrielle Giffords and the killing of six other people in Tucson was not a random event. It is a warning to working people about the serious political danger involved in the rise of the extreme right wing and the need to challenge their racist, militarist, and anti-worker propaganda. And as Alan Jones writes, because of the massive disappointment with the policies of the Democrats, there is a serious danger that the pro-corporate, well-organized, well-funded by billionaires Tea Party will continue to build its forces across the country. Although the far right will initially become undermined by this event, the shooting in Tucson, they will become a battering ram against the interests of working-class people who have suffered the most from the economic crisis. And the Democrats and the liberal left have shown that they are incapable of solving problems like mass unemployment and cuts in services, which are fueled by this so-called squall of anger. Furthermore, the Democrats are incapable of taking on the Tea Party by exposing its corporate backing. Why? Because they are also funded by the same corporate system. That's why. Serious workers and young people recognize the danger that the rise of the Tea Party represents and the need to confront its ideas. The Democrats cannot do this. It is urgent to call on unions and immigrant workers' organizations and anti-war groups and anti-cuts coalitions and socialists to organize rallies and demonstrations against the Tea Party, exposing their true backers and their racist and militaristic pro-corporate propaganda. You think we can do that? You think that'd be done? No, unlike Glenn Beck, we don't advocate that they shoot him in the head! Organize. One of the scariest people in the entire liberal pantheon that these right-wingers are terrified of are people, a man named Saul Alinsky, who put the whole solution into three words: organize, organize, organize. Whenever you hear respectable media types if that's not a contradiction in terms, aligning themselves with the right-wing crazy people in media, like Beck and the rest of his ilk, and trying to convince you, oh, Gerald Loeffler was just crazy. There's no connection. There's nothing there. Move along. There's no instigation by right-wingers 24-7, coast-to-coast, border-to-border. You want to hear it? Turn on the radio anytime during the day and listen to them. Listen to them. Listen to Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and Savage and the rest of these monsters. Listen to them. And then you tell yourself whether or not what you're hearing is truth or an attempt to make you, in Beck's words, shoot someone in the head. For the hour, Alan Jones, writing for the Socialist Alternative in Seattle, a socialist analysis of what occurred in Arizona. And in his last paragraph, Alan Jones writes, the organizing of immigrant workers' organizations, anti-war groups, unions, coalitions against these government cuts in social spending, socialists to organize rallies and demonstrations against the Tea Party, in an attempt to expose the backers of the Tea Party. This is not a populist movement. My God, it is backed by a couple of billionaires who do this for sport. And they hire proto-fascists like Beck to get on the radio every day and tell people to go shoot each other in the head. But the organizing, Alan Jones writes, should go hand in hand with serious mass campaigns to oppose the avalanche of budget cuts in education, health care, and services coming on the state and city level, like cops, like firefighters, like sanitation workers, like public school teachers, right? Jones says we need to prepare to run independent left candidates to put forward an independent working class fighting program of good jobs, full benefits, an end to war, an end to racist scapegoating. And in this way, we can start to deal with the real source of the enormous social discontent that is increasing in the United States because of the devastation of the lives of tens of millions of ordinary people as a result of the so-called crisis of capitalism, this destruction, this gangster capitalism. So, an alternative vision by Alan Jones and Mary, who sent this to me, said, Mike, the massacre of Loeffler was, of course, a response by a misled and confused individual who was wound up and set off by the right-wing rhetoric of right-wing organizations like the Tea Party and others. Right-wing groups like the Tea Party have been created to deflect attention from the real reasons for the economic crisis and instead blame immigrants, blame minorities, use divide-and-conquer strategies to keep the working class from uniting and fighting against these assaults from the ruling class. And unfortunately, they control the media, whether it's CNN, Fox, NPR, ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. So there will never be any real analysis of the economic crisis and what is actually happening to working people. This is an intentional strategy by the ruling class. They don't want people to understand that the ruling elites are responsible for this? And so demagogues like Palin and Beck and Savage and the rest of the crew are brought in to spew right-wing populism and recruit many confused people into the ranks of right-wing shock troops, which are then used to fight against the interests of those of us in the working class. And ironically, many of these confused recruits will also be fighting against their own interests. So you have, on the one hand, solutions offered by Alan Jones and his socialist analysis of what happened in Tucson. And I might add, not just Tucson. Do you really think it's going to stop now? Do you think that Beck and Palin and the rest of these fascists have dialed anything back? No, they have not. They've doubled down. More of the same. But you have an alternative, an offering from democratic socialists. And then you have, of course, Glenn Beck.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the polls. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
You're going to have to shoot them in the head. Gerald Loeffner shot a bunch of people in the head, didn't he? Yeah, he did. Following almost to the letter, Glenn Beck's directive. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. And there are still people in media and politics who want to convince the rest of us that this filthy right-wing rhetoric somehow exists in a vacuum. Over there. Well, you got to go listen to it on the radio. It's not part of anything that motivates these crazy people, whether they're on their way to the Tides Foundation to commit mass murder, or whether they actually commit it in Tucson, or whether they kill cops, or whether they do this or do that, or whether they break into this place and gun down people, it doesn't matter. The right-wing rhetoric, you see, has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it at all. When Glenn Beck says, you're going to have to shoot them in the head. Why, my goodness, he's just setting you up to hear the next commercial set in his program. You know, the ones that sell you dehydrated food and gold coins. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Thank you, America.